Hi, and welcome to the Unschool Space, a podcast that's here to help parents embrace their personal journey into unschooling with all the joy and challenges it's likely to bring. Each episode, I talk with other parents about their experiences, and this is episode 56, and I'm your host, Esther Jones. And if you're interested in hearing more about unschooling and mindful parenting, do visit my website, which is esther-jones.com, and sign up for my newsletter. So my guest today is Missy from Charlotte, North Carolina. Missy is a former teacher who lives with her husband and her two children, who are now 21 and 16. They chose to unschool when their son reached school age, as it just felt like a better fit for their family. Missy's experience in the classroom as a teacher had also made her question a model in which adult coercion was understood to be an essential part of learning. We talk today about the fear many parents have in the beginning and how important it is to hear other people's stories. We also talk about how we can support our children with compassion and curiosity and let go of the need to control outcomes. And Missy shares how she sees that this way of living has allowed her children to become practiced at touching in with their own values and knowing what's important for them. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, Missy. Thank you so much for your time today. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much for asking me. I'm so glad we get to finally meet.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, maybe we could start by you just telling us a little bit about your family, your journey to unschooling, and maybe kind of where you're at now.
Okay, sure. So I am living currently in Charlotte, North Carolina. My husband and I we grew up here, but we both went to separate colleges and left for a while. And I honestly had no intention on returning, only because I would just love the idea of living away from home and sort of creating my own life somewhere else and then popping back and forth in. But my father got really, really sick with cancer, and it prompted us to move back to sort of be with the family. And then he passed the day that we signed on our house here. It was the craziest experience. So we were like, okay, I guess he got us back home. So we got back home. We were in Charlotte, started a family soon after, and we've been here ever since. And so my oldest is 21, and my youngest is 16, almost 17. And, you know, I have a background in education and special education specifically, and had no intention of homeschooling. It was just not really on my radar. And then a very good friend, she had started with her kids homeschooling, and then eventually the word unschooling got thrown around, which I thought was kind of weird. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know, like how you don't school. So I was hesitant and definitely sort of like, not really sure. And then long story short, after being with them and then my son coming along and seeing how their life was unfolding, and it just felt so easy and free and comfortable. The kids were so happy, and they were playing and resting and doing what they needed to do naturally. And so when my son got to be close to school age, it became really, really clear that that felt like a natural trajectory for us too. On top of the fact that we had already, our parenting was, I wanted to be really thoughtful and peaceful and conscious about how I was interacting with my son. And so that, when school idea popped in and the fact that he could register, it just sort of ran up against everything that I felt as a parent and as a mom. And all of a sudden, this idea of this age, he becomes an age and now he has to take off and go away and be in this other world with all these people we've never met, nobody I've even talked to. It just did not make sense to me. And on top of that, my daughter was born 6 months before. So here he would have gone off to school at age 4, actually. He wouldn't have been 5 yet. And then emotionally, and then the fact that we were just kind of getting to know each other as a family of 4, to send him away, it just didn't make sense. So I thought, okay, I have a friend who's doing this. I have another friend who's doing this. I think we can handle it. And so we'll just see how it goes. I had no intention of making it forever a homeschooling experience. It was more like a year by year, and we'll just roll with it. And so here we are all these years later. He's graduated our homeschool. He's graduated college. And I can look back now and kind of laugh at some of the feelings I had about it and how scared I was. And, you know, that has honestly prompted me to do all the stuff I do now, which is to share our journey and experiences and try to walk people through it so they don't feel so alone and scared and worried.
That's lovely. Yeah, that fear piece. In fact, my last podcast guest, Lucy, we were talking about that and she was kind of introduced to unschool, and she happened to pick up a book, and she happened to have a little experience that made her think, oh. And sometimes, you've got to see something, haven't you, to believe it? Because there's so much fear.
Right. Well, and then the whole idea that I grew up with a template. Everybody I know grew up with a template, and this is what you do when you have children, and this is how it works, and this is how they become educated. And then I was trained that way as well. I was trained to work with kids in the classroom, which when I finally sat down and started really digging into all the things I learned, and it was sort of like, here's how you take care of the kids in the class. And then when you think about really how children learn or how we learn as adults, and then you think about child development and kind of where they are sort of developmentally and what their needs are and why they are different, it didn't match up. And even all the things I was doing in the classroom when I was running up against resistance with kids, I mean, there were days where I would spend all this time creating all this wonderful stuff and bringing resources and ideas, and then it was like, now sit down and listen to me, it just felt like it was so opposite of what I was like. I was excited about creating it, but then you have to like force it on the kids, and then you have to like make them enjoy it, and then you're watching their faces and you're seeing how they're responding, and you're thinking, why is this so hard, and that's I just think goes against everything we know is like human behavior and positive relationships. It's like if you're in a relationship with another person, an adult, and you just walked into a room and said, okay, today we're doing this, this, and this, and you have no say so, you think they're going to want to stick around us for very long?
Right. Well, it's funny, isn't it, how we know so much about human behavior, but we somehow fail to apply it to our children. It seems so basic, some of it. And what you're saying about school, I find really interesting, because I've recently been thinking quite a lot about this, how so much of what we think about is learning, or is a way a child has conditions they need to learn, are actually about conditions to manage a school. And they're dependent on the fact that you have 30 children in a class and there's a curriculum, but it hasn't got anything to do with that kind of neurological, the process that's happening in the mind. Like, what does that look like? And of course, it doesn't look like that. So it's an exploratory, it's a kind of an intrinsically driven movement through life, isn't it? Filled with curiosity. And, very hard thing to mimic in a classroom. So I think we get quite confused about, are they learning? What's learning as well around all of that?
Right. Well, and then, we've gotten into the testing side of things and this idea of we need a product. We need to see these numbers. We need to know that there's progress, because in any industry, if money is tied to the result, then you're going to force a result. And so when it comes to learning, it's such a personal experience, and it's sometimes so hard to even put a number to it. So like, how can you really tell that the five-year-old who's playing with blocks is making those connections, and how can you really draw that out of them? Well, they've tried to create ways to do that, but I don't feel like it's not consistent across the board, and every child is different. I know we have like similarities in age groups when it comes to their connections and their, logical, like rational thinking. It's a building block. And when we put a ton of 5-year-olds into a classroom and then say, okay, all this material is for 5-year-olds, we don't think about all the things that they've done before they've come to that class, or what was their family dynamic like? What is their history like? How much were they read to when they were little? Do they even understand what a book is? And so the difference in how children come to a classroom setting is just so vast, and to try to take this template and put it on everybody just makes no sense. So that's why you have the problems that you have, and then you have these special education classes, and then you start breaking kids off because people, teachers, administrators know you cannot teach the same to every kid, and so it can get hectic even in a homeschooling family because you're trying so hard to customize for each kid. So just imagine what it's like in a classroom full of 25.
Yeah, I have to say I was both shocked and relieved when my children started to know so much more than I did. And that illusion that I was leading anything really or teaching anything. Yeah. Not that I didn't hold on to that for very long at all, but that came crashing down when they'd kind of roll their eyes at me because I didn't know whatever historical or geographical context or geopolitical thing they were talking about. And I know what I found was so amazing when you're talking about that, so like each child, was that so much of the learning, well, I found and still do find, is invisible. I don't know what connections you're making. You are probably not, and I see my child, I don't know how they are taking that material in, what it is connecting to that they already know, what ideas it's generating, what new interest might come from that. I can't know that. I can't be privy to that, unfortunately. I can know that to a certain extent because we'll have some conversations and they'll, right? Like you can see what they're doing, can't you? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, how about your children. Because they're 21 and 17, is that right?
Almost 17, yes. So when you said conversation, that's 100% like what I say. Like, just talk, do what you naturally would do with somebody that you care about and somebody that you like and somebody that you're interested in. Ask questions. I will say, with the question part, I think you have to be a little bit careful because sometimes we can inundate kids with questions like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Blah, blah, blah. So instead of being like a answer for your time, be more curious about what it is you're enjoying about the thing. Like, so what about the game really intrigues you? What is this? Why is this fun for you? Or, talk to me about how this game works so that you're showing curiosity and actual interest instead of just like, I need to be sure you're doing something worthwhile, like a judge. And so, yeah, conversations have been huge for us and they have led to so many different things and also making me aware of where they are, And I always say that keys, they're like little keys, they just unlock the mysteries of our children and people that we love and care about. So conversations in the car, something will be said on the radio or they'll hear something and we'll just the conversation will start and I'll ask a question, they'll ask me a question. And I even wrote something a while back about my son when he was, I don't know, probably 11 or 12. And it came out one morning and I was making breakfast and he just starts telling me about a video he watched on YouTube. And he was like, historically with all the weather events, and he just got into this like this a little trail of how they were able to figure out certain weather patterns and before we were starting to document. And then he talked about this one time where apparently this wave came in and it was like, so high and it washed out an area. And it was so intriguing. And I was like, he and you can just see it in his eyes, he was just all lit up about what he learned. And we just went back and forth for a good 10 minutes. And then he was finally like, okay, good, I'm gone. And he left and went back to his room. And so that wasn't something I told him to look into. It wasn't a YouTube idea I gave to him. And he built his own computer. And that came about because of his interest. Well, I say, here I am trying to make the connection to Legos. But part of that, I feel like, is just his natural desire to make and to build. And then, of course, he got into technology. And then he one day was, I'm going to build my own computer. And again, that parent thought process that, oh, now I have to do something. In my mind, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to learn how to build a computer. I'm going to have to hire somebody. I'm going to have to research. And then he's like, Mom, I've got it. I've been reading and watching, and I have a person I've asked questions to. So all he did was fill up his Amazon cart with all the little pieces he needed. And he was saving his money, and then he became 15. He got birthday money and the money he had saved, and he bought it all. And we just once it showed up, we all put it together in the living room or in our dining room. And and I was beaming inside because I was like, well, and part of it was I was proud of myself in a way too, because it was like, okay, this is why we do what we do. It's to allow them to explore and find that pathway that works for them. Because if I way or tried to take over, he would have never gotten to that point. I don't have the time to watch all the videos that he watched. I didn't have the time to read up on the things or to interview the people. So sometimes as parents, we can actually hinder their growth and their learning if we think we need to control it.
Yeah, I like the way you heard that little voice. I sometimes hear that. I'm like, oh, help. What does this mean I have to do? What do I have to learn now? Where do I have to go now? Which kind of it makes me
I
laugh.
know.
It also does mean we learn an awful lot as we're going. But you're right, you've got to kind of know where what they're capable of. And I think, yeah, never take over. I think we all learn that very early on, don't we? That's one of our first lessons, perhaps, is that when the parent's too enthusiastic or too involved, the kid just says, yeah, okay, I'm done now. Thank you. I'm not interested anymore.
Because we took control.
Right. You turned it into something about...
Yeah, we kind of hijacked.
Yeah.
I think that happens a lot, the hijacking. So what's your son doing now then? Is it a computer related? No. Okay.
Funny enough, no. So we have what's called dual enrollment here in North Carolina, which is when you're in high school, you can enroll in our community college and you can either do the college prep track or the career track. And at the time, he was 16-ish, 16, 17, he decided he wanted to do the career. So he picked simulation and game development and did that, learned a ton, got a diploma in it, and then said, I don't think I can do this for a full-time job because it's so much sitting and he just likes busy, very physical. Yeah. So he kind of switched gears. And he got a personal trainer's license with the idea. And he also has an associate's degree, which is basically a 2-year degree. So if he wants to go back to college and get a 4-year, he'll take a couple of years and he'll get a 4-year degree. And he's contemplating that. That hasn't been written off completely. It's more like I know it's an option and I know I can do it. But right now he's very interested in the career side of things and getting started and, you know, making his own money and doing his own thing and setting his own schedule. And, you know, it's a very, very self-directed unschooling way to go.
It is. Isn't it interesting? Because the sort of stereotype around this is, these children will never learn to sort of do things themselves. But of course, it's really the opposite, isn't it? They spend their lives making these little micro decisions, feeling into, is this right? Is this wrong? Is this something that I am motivated enough for? Mm-hmm. They become quite wise to themselves.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the only way to know yourself is to practice being yourself. Right. And I mean, if we keep telling them, you have to get up at this time and you have to do this and da, 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 and it's like, where's their voice? Where's their internal monitor telling them when and where to go? I mean, of course, you know, children aren't born to themselves and they're born into a family unit and they're born to parents, but for a reason. I mean, we have this, we get the evolutionary experience of, we have older people who can create systems and environments to support their growth and development. And of course, we're there to sort of buffer them and to even bounce ideas around and have them consider things and think things through. But when it really comes to getting to know themselves, it is a practice and they have to practice it in order to do that, including failing sometimes and creating challenges for themselves that they have to then get out of. But, you know, it's not that we just sit back and go, oh, well, we'll see what happens. You know, I mean, we obviously needed and guide as needed. And I told them to tell me when I was too much, you know, just like, okay, mom, you're too much. I got it. I've got it. That's all. Because, you know, I can get excited about things and overly enthusiastic and sort of like, oh, I'm seeing where this is leading now. This is amazing. Okay, why don't we do this? And they're like, slow down. Not there yet.
I'm not there yet. I love that. Yeah, I'm not there yet. And in fact, I noticed that some things they would sort of pick them up and play with them and think about them, but they didn't actually necessarily want to leap into that thing.
Right.
You know, and I think that's when we're feeling a little bit nervous around things. That's when we kind of want to pin it down, don't we? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's, you know, typically as parents, we want things to be okay and to feel safe. So being able to say, okay, well, I trust that it will be okay. And I think over time, what you were just saying there, I can't quite remember how you phrased it. It was lovely what you said. Yeah, to know how to be yourself, you have to practice being yourself. And I think that as the children get older, you have the strong sense that they know how to be themselves, right? And so I think that you end up with that certainty, not the certainty of, you know, what they'll do, but you know they're going to make great choices.
Yeah. Well, and we have to remember that, you know, the way we live our lives is a big part of that. You know, we are setting and examples all the time, not just in, you know, in our behavior. You know, people say things, but it's like, what are you really doing though? What is the action that you're taking and how are you showing up in the world? Because, you know, words can be very cheap if you're not doing what you say you think needs to be done. So, you know, you live your life, you be joyful in your learning, you show people the things that you're excited about and it ripples. And, you know, if you're interested in reading and you have books in the house, you know, you're showing people that reading is valuable and that there's something to it. It doesn't mean they'll necessarily pick it up, but at least that's in their mind, you know, even if they haven't talked about it necessarily. But, and then the same thing, like with them, you know, I listen to podcasts all the time. Yeah. So when I'm cleaning the house, a podcast is going. So it's always blaring in the house somewhere. And I just think it's super important to live the life in a way that you feel like is worth mimicking in some sort of way. It doesn't mean your kids to mimic you, but at least it's showing them what it means to be an adult and what it means to live in this world in a joyful way and to impact others if you possibly can.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I think it can be easy for people to feel that they have to sort of sacrifice them in order for their children to, you know, like, and unfortunately, I don't think that works very well, because that when you are feeling good, bringing joy into your life, and you have all your ducks in a row, you're holding the space in a different way, you know, because at the end of the day, we are probably, if we're the main caregiver, it could be a dad as well, could be both at the same time, you know, whatever family members there are, the way we are really impacts that space, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, there's I think it's Carl Jung that said something like I'm not going to get it quite right, but it's kind of like the most impactful thing on a child's development is the unlived life of their parent. You know, so it's like when parents aren't living, then, you know, that is going to impact their children. So yeah, one of my really favorite quotes, as a matter of fact, the last piece I just wrote about, it's John Whitehead, and he said that children are the living messages we send to a time we will never see. And I just love that. It just feels so, yes, exactly. You know, we're not going to be there in some amount of time, but what is the message that we're sending to the world through them? And
yeah, I love that. Powerful. And what's your 16-year-old doing then? What's she up to?
She's so fun. So she's in a co-op on Fridays. And it's a teen co-op that we joined. So we started in 2022. Mm-hmm. So a mom organized it with a bunch of teens, and we found out about it, started joining in. And now I'm helping the mom organize events and things. And we have like 28 teens come together every Saturday. They have multiple different events and activities that they do. A lot of the parents pitch in and lead a class. So we've had things on like finance, on critical thinking, on logic. We go on these different field trips. We hike and, you know, have outings together. One mom, as a matter of fact, one family is about to organize a trial, we're going to have a jury trial. There's going to be defendants. And so it'll be really interesting. And I'm sure it'll be super funny too, because we have quite a few characters in there. So she does that every Friday. She volunteers on Wednesdays at an equestrian facility with kids with special needs. They get to come and ride horses. And the man who owns this farm is just like, he's just so nice. He's like 90 something years old, and he's been providing this service to the community for years. They really run on volunteers. And so she's old enough now to participate. So she goes on Wednesday afternoons to do that. And she's really interested in art. So her drawing has been something for her, which, by the way, when we were talking about my son, it made me think of her too, because if I had been the one that, you know, led her art exploration or taught her art, she would never be where she is. And her art is amazing. It's so beautiful. And you can just feel it. You know, when she draws something, you just see the eyes. It's really, really pretty. But like we talked about turning that into a career and possibly even doing graphic art, things like that. And she's just not sure. She's like, I'm not sure if I want to use that as my where I need to make money, because it's such an internal process and it's such a natural flow that the idea of doing something on a timeline for someone else almost feels like it would take away her creativity. So it's something she's working through, and she's done some work for people. She's actually made some things, and you know, she gets questions sometimes like, will you draw us this, will you draw us that, and sometimes I don't know, maybe, you know. So she wants it to come from inside. She doesn't want to feel that pressure of like doing it for a timeline and I'm allowing her to work that. I'm just trying to encourage her that it is a gift and people want her to do it because it is lovely. And so
yeah, but how lovely that she's aware of that process and that she's working through that at such a young age, to be so aware of that. Mm-hmm. That's quite nuanced, isn't it, for a lot of people.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I just come back to something you said there, Missy? You said about how if you'd been the teacher, it wouldn't have looked like that. And I think that perhaps there's a misconception around unschooling and teaching. I don't know what your experience is in this, but for example, I haven't taught my children anything. The only thing I would say that I've been asked to share with them has been my knowledge of Italian and French. So we speak Italian and French together, you know, mm-hmm. over breakfast or whatever, if someone wants to practice a little bit of that. They all speak Spanish because we lived in Spain for many years. But they have sought out the teachers they've wanted. When they've needed something, they have found always the resource. Sometimes they've wanted a tutor in something. Sometimes it has been a very particular YouTuber, but that YouTuber, not that one. Do you know what I mean? They've known how to learn, and they've known when they've wanted an adult, generally an adult, to guide them. And so, again, that just that misconception around, oh, there's no teaching, there's no learning from other people. There's lots. If it's chosen, that can absolutely be part of this picture, can't it?
Yes. And it's so much more powerful, and it sticks because they're seeking it out. You know, it's
right, something in their mind that said,
I need this, I want this, or this is the next piece to get me to the next step. And
I love that. It's the next piece. Yeah,
it exactly. really is. And 100% the idea that you as a homeschooling or unschooling parent have to be the primary imparter of knowledge is a myth. And it's a misconception, too, of what homeschooling and unschooling is. It's really just following the child and where do their interests take them, where their interests lead them. And, you know, I do feel after doing this for a while and growing with my kids and learning more about the process of, you know, kind of coming into your own, there are absolutely specific things that are important for us to impart on our children, you know, and to walk them and direct instruction on certain things. The difference is just how you approach it. So, you know, we want our kids to be competent. We want them to have the basic understanding of certain things in order to build on those foundational skills. So certain math concepts, you know, speaking or writing concepts, but they're really, and interaction, interpersonal, hygiene, you know, there's just certain things that we do talk to our children about. And not because we're trying to force them into a certain way, but because we're really trying to arm them with knowledge and so they can be resourceful. Because I think that might be, I'm still working this out and try to how to explain this, but of all the questions that people have about homeschooling or unschooling, I think what's underneath it is the fear of them not being competent in certain ways, and they're going to miss those foundational skills that won't allow them to become fully autonomous, individualized. So I think the fear is that if it doesn't happen here, it won't happen here.
Mm.
You know? And
so kind
of
missed out on something that they can't get back. Right.
Yeah. And what I found is the complete opposite, which is that we've really focused and allowed our kids to just have freedom and flexibility and play and adventure, you know, explore and whatever their interests are, we went with it. And, you know, then my son got to an age where he wanted to enroll in the school enrollment program. Prior to that, we hadn't sat down and done like, there's all these particular 5-paragraph essays and all this stuff. I mean, he did some of that stuff in some of the courses and classes he took on his own. But what I found was as soon as he was ready to learn, we sat down and it was like, wow, you know, because he's got all these experiences to pull from. You know, his choices were so much wider than if you're an 11-year-old who's asked to write a 5-paragraph essay on why you think going on vacation is important. I'm like, well, has he ever gone on vacation? You know, like, have they ever really, you know, had a chance to sit with their thoughts and have they talked to anybody? You know, so there's, I think life experience is underappreciated in order to then academically move forward. So we're almost forcing kids to be academic before they've even had life experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also in there is the fact that they're not used to the idea of getting it right or wrong. So they're used to experimenting, and, you know, they might experiment, they might do some math and then go, oh, that's interesting, I thought that was right, but it's not. There's no sense of failure. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they go through with a far more open, perhaps more open mindset to trying things. I also feel, you know, well, it's curious in our family because there are 3, 18, 16 and 11, and the maths one is quite fascinating to me at the moment, because my 18-year-old is doing a college, local college course, and maths is a part of that. He'd done it quite a lot of maths, but quite informally and out of choice, but he had done lots of workshops and things. He loves it. He really enjoys it. And curiously, he's in a class with some kids who at school didn't do well at maths. So there's kind of like a You know, the class is quite disruptive, so they've ended up dividing them into the two, the ones who want to just get on with maths and the disruptive ones who are tired of maths. So there's that. My 16-year-old is taking a math GCSE out of choice because he'd like to go into go to college, and he's doing some exams this year. So we do sit down in the evening together. So he's got other places that he's getting help, but then the two of us sort of go through this book together. And we try to make it as fun as possible with a cup of tea and some biscuits, and you know. And then my 11-year-old recently has started to actually panic about maths, which is interesting. And everyone was kind of like, well, but, and she actually is naturally very good at maths. And she always was. She loved adding things up. So she, by her own account, is sitting at the kitchen table going through this terribly boring book, which I bought right at the beginning of all this, when I didn't realize there was any other way of learning math, and then it just sat on the shelf, ignored. So each child has been entirely different. And I agree with you that they come in with also, they haven't got a fear of it, no fear of numbers.
It's more just, what
No.
is this? Let's investigate. Let's figure this out. How does this apply? Where can I use this in my life?
Yeah.
Where have I used this in my life? Why is it important to know? What is it going to do for me in order to have these skills? And I think, that's the way everything is, isn't it? You've got that. That's why there's such a vast difference in what people go into for their careers or what their special interests are. It's because it's just how it lands on them as the individual that they are. And then also, there's just what have they been exposed to? What are the interests of the family members in the home? What messages are they getting from the world about what they should or shouldn't be doing, or what's something to pursue or what's worthy to pursue? And then they have to, I hope that then they take it in and then run it through their own value system. Probably the hardest part of our unschooling journey has been that, where the outside world is saying, and the kids are picking it up, they have friends in school, they have friends going off to college, they have friends doing this, that, and the other. And then they're thinking, well, am I doing this right or wrong? And I'm always like, check it in, check in with yourself. So my son has, I mean, he it's funny, I hear him off like in a conversation, and he'll have a conversation about his plans. And we're around a lot of people who have a very specific thought process about what education looks like and what the order is and what success looks like. And I always ask him to think about, but are they happy? They the thing, but what are they saying? What are the words that they're using to describe their life or their interests or their job or whatever it is? And I was like, just keep checking in. I'm not saying that you have to get a job that makes you happy all the time. I mean, I think that's unrealistic to think that you're not gonna have challenges or things aren't gonna be boring sometimes, or that you're gonna have to do tasks that you don't really want to do, but you have to do it in order to get to the next step. So, I think it's, I would just be cautious about like saying, oh, you have to pick something that's only going to make you happy, because I feel like, not saying that the idea of the job and the purpose and the meaning and everything is something that gives you value and brings you happiness. But to only be happy, I think that's the worries me about like finding your joy. I don't know. I hope I'm not sounding like I don't want people to be happy. That's what I'm
No,
saying, right? Like,
not at all. But then I think that checking in with yourself, I don't think you can do much more than that, can you? Because if you are in your job and you're not feeling happy, and you check in and you can figure out, is this a little momentary thing that, or actually am I ready to move on? Which huge part of unschooling, allowed to move on
exactly,
from
yes.
things. It makes me laugh. I mean, I was totally, when I had children, was very much a, you stick at things. I've always been a sticking at things person, much to my detriment, I have to say. I love it when I don't love it when they give things up, but I do love the wisdom. They love the thought process where they said, you know what, I don't want to do this any longer. And I'm always curious as to why. And when I look back at all the things that were given up and I see that they made space for the next thing, there's never been any regret, I don't think, by anybody ever. Certainly not by me.
Right.
It's interesting that bit, isn't
Oh,
it?
it so is. And how much we attach value to the things that they do for our own sake. There's the whole idea of like, oh, but if they did this, oh, that would look really good. And then it's like, but who is it looking good for? Is it really for them? Is it really for me? My son was really into baseball early up through age 11-ish. And had been asked to come onto this very specific team to travel and to go like far away. And he was just done. He had played and played and played and done really, really well. And this is what's so funny, because so some of the coaches who really liked him and he liked them, when he said no, he didn't want to go, the adults looked at me and my husband was like, can you make him? I'm like, we don't do that, you know? And they're like, he needs to come, he needs to come. And we're just like, no, he doesn't want to. And I'm like, do you really want a child involved in something that's it's not in here anymore, that it feels like it's being a pressure and force? So he left baseball. And at the time, like within that year, he started really getting involved in FIFA, which is an online soccer game. Hmm. And then one day he goes, I want to play soccer. And we're like, okay, let's do it. So I had a friend whose son had played, and she had a friend, her son's friend was still in town, and we connected, and he was able to give him one-on-one instruction on certain things. Because one thing I have found in a lot of these recreational leagues is that usually if a kid goes into baseball, they start at like 5 or 6 and they're there, you know, same with soccer. They start at 5 and 6 and they're there. So he walked on the soccer field for the first time as a 12-year-old. Mm. And, you know, it was an experience and he had to learn, but he got all this knowledge from the game. He learned about the countries. He knew the country flags. He understood all the ins and outs of the game of soccer. So, you know, that first year was, or first team he was on, you know, it was a huge learning curve, but he learned it so fast and it was just boom. And so he stuck with soccer all the way through, you know, he still enjoys playing. But what I love so much about that story is the fact that it was a pivot point for him that he was allowed to do, because we didn't attach our value to his choice. And a lot of these families will do that, or parents, like in the whole sporting world. I mean, we had multiple times where we would see parents yelling at their kids and fussing at them about doing it wrong. And you could just see their whole bodies just like slumping over. And even my son noticed it. He was like, why are you doing that to him? And I was like, not sure, but you know, but some of them had been like baseball players when they were in college, and you know, it's like they're forcing their kids into it. And I know I still have to check myself, you know, I still have to every once in a while go, okay, wait, where is this coming from? Are you worried about something that, you know, that it's going to impact you or affect you or reflect on you? So, you know, as a parent, sometimes we have to just slow down and remember this is their life.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's unfortunate that the good parenting, right, good kind of mainstream parenting often has this kind of this controlling aspect to it, where we, you know, guide our children to making choices that we believe are right for them. So I think to not do that, it can feel a little bit, it can feel shaky, I think,
like,
to start.
Yeah, and indifferent, almost like you don't care.
Yeah. You might feel a little bit neglectful at the beginning to not be guiding them to what you think that everybody is saying is the right way to go. And what about you, Missy? What kind of things has it all brought up for you, and has it how has it impacted your life? I'm sure it's impacted it hugely.
Yeah, it has. I mean, you know, I think when we have children, when we go into that world, it forces you to think about all the things that you thought you knew before becoming a parent. And, you know, it brings up your own past. It brings up your own way of what were the messages that I received as a child, and what it was like to, you know, be a child and be parented. And so, there's amazing growth in it. And it allows this whole process of being a parent and unschooling has just allowed me to become more solid in the person that I am and what I want in the world and what I hope to leave the world when I'm gone. And it also makes me recognize how I feel as a society, we have really shortchanged our kids. And that frustrates me and it motivates me. And it helps me stay connected to this sort of why of talking about unschooling and parenting and human development and relationships. Because it's like you said at the very beginning, you know, you kind of, I think it was Lucy, you said she picked up a book. And so it's like, why not put that information out there? Because there's somebody somewhere who's going to read that post, who's going to hear that story, who's going to listen to a podcast that's going to be that seed that needed to be planted for them to start thinking and figuring things out. So I just, over this whole experience, I've recognized and appreciated the power of story, you know, and it's amazing what I have been influenced by and why I changed my opinion or ideas or trajectory because of what I saw someone else do. And I realized, oh, that's possible.
It opens up possibility, doesn't it? I think when you see someone else do something that had felt absolutely impossible to you, that's so powerful.
Just
to see that person walking that path.
Right. You know, and of course, in the social media fields or world, sometimes it can seem like it's one or the other or us against them. And it's not. It's more this is a choice. And so if you want to take this choice, there are ways that you can take this choice. If you want to do this, and of course, this time, this day and age, it's difficult, you know, for families not to have two working parents, especially in cities and very expensive places. But I think the fact that we have access to information the way we do through technology is a game changer. And it allows families to have access to things that they wouldn't have had before. You know, there's not, the gatekeepers aren't there as much as they used to be.
No, that's right. Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. The technology experience has definitely allowed more people to access homeschooling as an option.
Yeah. And did you have a good community around you then when you were doing that? I can tell that you do certainly now, but did you when you were beginning? Were there lots of people?
So we did, but because at the beginning it was more, you know, my close friend, and she had already kind of established a little circle of people that she was visiting with through her children. And then, you know, as time went on, it grew. And then at one point we ended up belonging to a co-op of families, maybe 12 to 15 families that were meeting regularly. And then it kind of blossomed. At one point, I think we had 50, and then we went back down. People were coming and going, 50 kids, sorry. And then at one point we merged with another group, and it got so big that my kids were like, we can't do this. We don't want to be here, because it was just so hectic. You know, there were little, there were babies in arms all the way up to like 15-year-olds. And it was just, so it felt, it lost the coziness and the connection. Smaller group. But so yeah, no, we've had community on and off. And I've also found that connecting with other families through shared interests that's so huge. And it's not, you know, so when people are looking for relationships or friends or peers for their kids, it's you know, there's this idea that you have to go into a building in a school with only kids of that same age. And it's like, no, just create the interest, because that's where they find that spark. You know, and that's how kids can talk to each other, because we even organized a Pokemon meetup with my son's friends when he was like 7 or 8, and they got together and they talked about Pokemon cards and they played the game and they shared things and they traded cards. And, you know, then it was like, hey, mom, can we see so-and-so again? Because, you know, he and I were wanting to trade cards. And then it was like, okay, and that friendship blossomed, you know. And the same with my daughter, horse or art, or she was really into baking or cooking. And so we did like cooking classes. And so it's really just, again, goes back to who are your kids? What are they interested in? And then find something that's related to that and invite people, you know, create it.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Because I think a lot of people do get stuck on the community piece. And I think that, you know, they can feel quite isolated. And yeah, I would absolutely encourage people to sort of go out and create community. And community might look, it will look different for everybody. And like you said, it comes and goes. So there might be a moment you look around, you're like, oh, this is perfect. You know, we've got these families of the same age children as my children. And then, you know, 6 months later, it might look completely different.
Exactly.
I think you have to, perhaps that's the place to be putting the energy in community building. And if you have children who are not very sociable at a certain point in their lives, but you need community, I also would advise people to kind of do that for themselves.
Yeah, we even had mother meetup kind of things. It was like the moms were like, you know, we're going to go out to dinner. We're going to go have coffee, whatever the case is. Come and just have a break or have, you know, ask questions. So we would just physically get together for those sorts of things. And then the other two thing is with the kids or with the friendships and peers, you know, I found over the years that my kids need to be with other kids. Ebbed and flowed, you know, and it was like they didn't have to have that physical engagement all the time. It was just a little here and there, a little here and there. Right. And they felt filled up and they were happy. And then when they felt like, okay, we've been home too much or we haven't really seen people lately, it's like, it's almost like this little energetic buzz. And they're like, okay, we need to be with people. And I think you just have to watch your children and figure out what they need. Because, and the other thing is, they might not need the same thing that you need. You know, you might have a extroverted parent and a very introverted kid. So you kind of have to find that balance that makes it work for you too. So
Yeah, I like that you've brought that up because I think, you know, again, when people take their children out of school, there's the whole piece around socialization. But socialization doesn't need to be 9 o'clock till 4 o'clock every day with huge amounts of children. It's very unlikely that a child would ask for that, although some might want that level of interaction. Most will want, as you say, an amount. And then to be able to say, and again, this is so powerful, isn't it? To be able to say, right, that's enough, thank you. I'm done now. Again, when we get into topics like about consent and about boundaries and all those things that we hope that they'll really understand when they're older, to have when you're age 11 to be able to say, that's enough people, thank you. Now I'd like to be alone. And that's really, it's really big, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think about how I feel in very large social environments, and you know, and it's energizing and it's fun, but then I'm so tired. And
Yeah.
then it's like, okay, I need to be here now. I don't want to talk for a while. You know, there's
No,
just
same here.
be like I'm out. But then there are days where, like, especially in the winter or when the weather's particularly not so conducive to going out and walking around and visiting with people, you know, I'll notice like about by day 3 or 4, if I haven't really gone out and done anything, I'm like, okay, I got to get out for a little bit. You know, who's coming with me? Who
Yeah.
wants to? This is what I'm doing. And so, you know, offer it up as an option, and then people take it. Great. If they don't, you can go to the store by yourself. You can go on a walk. And then I was just going to say one thing we've experienced throughout the years that I noticed with both kids is that those 1 day a week events where we would get together with a lot of families was exactly perfect for them, because it was, they knew it was coming. It was consistent. They could depend on it. They didn't have to do it every single day. And as a matter of fact, if they had to do it every single day, I can see why they would eventually be like, I don't want to be around these people anymore. Not because the people themselves necessarily, but the energy of it all and the expectation and the busyness. It's like they just really needed to go and come back, go
Yeah.
and come back. And I think that is the beauty of this, like creating that customized schedule for your family and the rhythm that works for you and the amount of activities that you want to do that work for you, that there's no set way to unschool. There's no amount of time and amount of classes and courses. It's just what does that look like for you? And it really literally gets to be customized.
Yeah, and it's what everybody, well, you know, and it can be complex, can't you? As you said, you're quite introverted. You've got one very extroverted child, one very introverted child. I think when they're younger, there's a complexity to balancing it all. But as everybody gets older, and yeah, I think there's again, it's that allowing people to feel into their own kind of connection with what's right for them, and to be wise as to what they need, knowing their own needs. I see it again here, you know, all three, they're very, very different. And they all need a lot of downtime, actually. Although they're, you know, they love to see other people, but they also need that time.
I'd love to be able to do like a survey or something and ask all the unschooling families I can, but some of the ones that I know have unschooled from for the whole time and now they're adults, they're really comfortable in themselves and they're really comfortable with who they are and they're okay being alone. They're not lonely, you know? It's like they're good. And then it seems that they're just real comfortable being in a setting and being out of a setting. You know, it doesn't have to be one way or the other. So if there's a flexibility about them that seems like it was created over time because they had the opportunity to really know who they are.
Yeah, again, back to that practicing, what did you say? Practicing being who you are.
Right. Yeah. Can't become, I don't even remember. It was something like, can't be
Yeah.
who you are unless you practice being yourself or something
Yeah,
along
I
those.
love that phrase. Oh, it's been lovely talking to you. We're coming to the end now, Missy, but I'd just like to mention that you also have a podcast. It's been going for 2 years.
We think I've had like 33 episodes. I think I've talked to like 38 people. Several of those episodes were multiple people. But yes, I took a break for a while, and like you and I were talking beforehand, it was just so un it was like unplanned. It just happened, and through our sort of like self-directed unschooling thought process, I was like, let's just let it roll. We'll see what happens. The whole holiday time is coming on, and my son had a birthday, and so this new year is, I feel re-energized. And so yes, it will be starting back up this year.
Right. I'll put the details in the notes about that as well. And before we say goodbye, is there any if there's anyone out there thinking about taking the leap, do you have Any particular words of advice that sort of resonate with you in your life that you would like to share?
I would say that some of it is just getting quiet on with yourself and understanding what it is you're looking for and what is your why. And I think that's so powerful, because once you have that why, it's like an anchor. And once you know why you want to do it, try not to be reactive to the school system. Whereas, like, you know, obviously if your kid is in danger or there's really something unhealthy happening, you know, just get them out of there and it'll work out. You'll figure it out. But if you're teetering between the two and your kids are actually happy, or you feel like they're doing okay, but then you as a family, you feel like it would be a better choice. You know, just get clear on your why. Why do you want to do it? What do you, how will things change for your family? Just kind of think it through. But if you're open to the idea of just trying it out, you know, just be flexible in the movement towards that, and then be flexible if it goes the other way. I mean, I've offered for my children to go to school if they wanted to, if they felt like that was something that they were leaning towards. But every time I ask, they say no, thank you, because they have had this lifestyle for a while, but they've also been able to see what the other options are. I think if our public school system was set up in a way that it was almost like a menu of choices, they probably would tap in here and there for different things. But I think if you're interested, if you think it's something that sounds wonderful for your family, it, why not just try it? And, you know, it's not a forever decision today. It's a, let's do this, let's roll with it, see how it unfolds. But do give yourself some time to at least get into that rhythm. You know, they don't bring your kids home from school and 2 weeks then you're feeling all chaotic and you think this is not working. You do have to give it some time. You know, it has to marinate. You have to kind of create new rhythms for your family. You have to kind of get to know each other again. So yeah, give it some time, but definitely give it a try.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and finding your why as the anchor, that's so important, isn't it? And what you were saying there, don't be reactive. Think, what's the positive reason for this? You know, and if it's feeling negative at the moment, what can it bring you that feels good? I think that's important. So it's not a reaction against, but maybe it's a movement towards something.
Right. Yeah, I love that. Yes. Yeah. Move towards instead of running away.
Exactly. Oh, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank
this is
you.
Lovely chatting.
Enjoyed it so much. Thank you.
I'll put in the notes how people can follow you and hear from you more. Great. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.